Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Neil Garfield Show, a presentation sponsored by www.livinglies.wordpress.com, GTC Honored, and the law firm of Garfield, Kelly & White, serving all 50 states with news and analysis of the latest bank scams against borrowers, homeowners, consumers, and investors, and providing legal representation throughout Florida. This program is for general information only. It is not a solicitation for services or legal representation and should never be used as a substitute for advice from a licensed professional. And now, here's world-renowned financial expert, attorney, and blogger, Neil Garfield.
Hi, this is Neil Garfield, and this is Thursday, October 16th, 2014. I'm broadcasting live from Boynton Beach, Florida, brought to you by the Living Lies blog, GTC Honors, AMGAR, the Garfield firm with offices in Tallahassee and Fort Lauderdale. And, of course, this show is specially brought to all of us by donations to the Living Lies blog from listeners like you. Thank you. And for those of you who are not contributors, we ask that you pull 954-495-9867 and pledge whatever you think you can afford. Our mission here is to share as much information as we can to help beleaguered homeowners and other people who may not be aware of the effect that the housing crisis has had on them. If you've lost a job, you're being paid less, you're working fewer hours, or you're losing benefits, or you've given up, it's most likely caused, at least in part, by the mega banks, mostly located in New York, who suck the life out of our economy. If you are a homeowner who was lured into a deal that couldn't work based upon the blatant lies told to you by people who knew better and who knew you would believe them, then you're in the right place. And there is no better place to start today before the question and answer period on our show tonight than the recent decision by the First District Court of Florida filed 2 days ago. The whole decision and some of my comments are on the blog, www.livinglies.wordpress.com. And, of course, if you have any questions or wish to schedule a consult or purchase some service or product, please call us at 954-495-9867 or 520-405-1688. There are a lot of important things about the new decision from the First District Court of Appeal in the Deutsch case. Some of them have already been outlined in some of my recent articles, and I'll be saying more in the coming days and weeks. But I think the most important thing that this case clearly illustrates is that while a lender can win a foreclosure case, a pretender lender cannot and doesn't even belong in court. And the first DCA obviously got that loud and clear. And that's the nub of the issue. It's hard to believe when you've signed the note mortgage and you're pretty sure you got the loan. How could it be that the loan is not enforceable against you? And the answer is that if you get a loan, of course it can be enforced against you, but it could only be enforced by the person who loaned you the money. And here we've had a fraudulent scheme in which there were three potential lenders. One was the investors, and those are the ones whose money was actually used to lend you the money. Another was the broker dealers that was selling the mortgage-backed securities to the investors. And still another one is the holder of the loan paper, which is completely void and invalid in many cases, in my opinion. And I think you'll see that opinion echoed in many decisions around the country. And I think you're going to see a lot of decisions that are rendered by juries for punitive damages against the banks who are doing this and who have been doing this. Not even the $25 billion that supposedly was paid, or the new $17 billion by Bank of America, is going to stop these banks from doing anything until the courts say, this is not right, this is not legal. And all I've ever asked is that the courts apply the existing law. I'm not asking for some sort of handout or relief to homeowners. I'm asking for justice, because they don't owe the amount of money that being asked of them. There is, in most cases, no real default that's occurred on the original loan. And there's a variety of issues that simply make it wrong for these banks to ask these homeowners to pay the banks when the banks have not loaned them any money, nor have they laid out a penny to acquire any of these loans. Around 95% of the people faced with foreclosure walk away and leave their keys on the kitchen counter, not knowing that they have no reason to leave and that their loan is not nearly as large as they think it is. There is no right or wrong answer to this. People have a right to throw in the towel and to try to move on with their lives. I don't dispute that at all. But when they do so, they are finding obstacles in their path, like getting a place to rent or trying to buy a different place to live. Foreclosure, the bankruptcy, if there is one, haunts them. The potential for a deficiency judge haunts them. Their credit record is trashed, all by people who were not creditors and had no right to take any action at all. Not in my opinion, and not in the opinion of many, many other people now. When I first stated that in 2007, I was a lone voice in the wilderness and thought to be a bit of a nut. Well, maybe I am a bit of a nut, but that didn't make me wrong. I was right, and now we know I'm right. And all the while, when these people, 95% walking out on their own homes, they don't know that they never received a loan from the people they thought. They don't know that the note and mortgage were made out to pretenders, actors, who were well paid to pretend that they were lending you money. They don't know that the origination of their loan probably violated most of the important federal and state statutes and regulations concerning lending. And they don't know that the government has become complicit in the fraud being worked not only against the homeowners, but against the entire society in which we live. The Deutsch case, found on my blog with a hat tip to several people who sent it to me, thank you, and a special hat tip to StopForeclosureFraud.com, brings us full circle to what I was saying 7 years ago when I started this adventure. In that case, the trial judge did the usual things, overruling objections from the defendant homeowners, allowing in evidence as though it was evidence from the plaintiff, no matter how lame, no matter how lacking in foundation, lacking in authenticity, and lacking the truth of the matter. The appellate court not only reversed the trial court decision on foreclosure, they took the extra step of not allowing Deutsche Bank to try and hoodwink the system and get a second bite of the apple. The court, sounding like they had just about enough of these non-cases that were resulting in forfeiture of house and home, ordered the trial judge to enter a final order of involuntary dismissal. Deutsche is done in that case, and soon you will see similar decisions raining down from appellate courts as overly confident trial judges are reversed one after the other. Because, you see, they never had the right to collect on the debt, enforce the note, or seek foreclosure. The Deutsche case illustrates how the plaintiffs, in most cases, have no right to bring foreclosure action. The only way they get away with it is by applying layer after layer of alleged legal presumptions until the trial judge can't see over the top of them. And looking at what appear to be facially valid documents and considering the judge's natural predisposition to believe that nobody would foreclose on a borrower unless they were the lender, they rule and enter orders and judgments for the banks, borrowers, when the exact reverse should happen. And that is why the trial judge was reversed in this case and will be reversed in many cases to come. These presumptions are in reality just assumptions and or even bias, and not really legal presumptions. And they are contrary to the actual facts that rebut those assumptions, or even if you consider them legal presumptions. In this case, the trial court applied exactly those presumptions, causing the burden of proof to be shifted to the borrower. The appellate court correctly stated that the prima facie case of the plaintiff did not exist, acquired from the defendant homeowner. The appellate court ordered the case to be involuntarily dismissed with prejudice. Game over. Not all cases present the same fact patterns, and you should be aware that what you hear on this show and even in looking at the blog, that's not the same as getting actual advice from an attorney who is licensed in the jurisdiction in which your property is located or in which the action is brought. This doesn't close things out for all foreclosures, but it provides a guide to how lawyers should argue the cases starting at the beginning of their engagement in the case. So let's look at why this is finally coming out the way I predicted every day since October 2007. One layer down is the real key to justice for homeowners. There's an assumption that the homeowner received a loan from the originator. That assumption is generally wrong. The loan of money in most cases did not come from the originator. If it was a loan from the originator, then each transfer, each endorsement, each assignment would be the result of a transaction in which the loan documents were purchased for value in good faith and without knowledge of the borrower's defenses. That would mean that the end of the chain claimed by the foreclosing party would be a holder in due course. That's a special term. And it's a special condition where the risk of loss is shifted from the borrower, who never got his money, to the holder in due course. The risk of loss is on the borrower, instead of the new party entering the position of lender. Because when you're a holder in due course, you paid for it. And it's a legislative determination in all 50 states that a holder in due course can take action on the note even if there are defenses, viable defenses by the borrower against the original lender. And that would mean that all the suits in foreclosure would consist of either the original lender who actually made the loan or a successor who actually paid to acquire it. Then there wouldn't be any valid defenses other than payment. The Deutsch case shows that there are essential flaws in the alleged securitization process. These flaws consist of violations of New York state law, which is what most of the REMIC trusts are governed by, sometimes Delaware law, but it has the same provision that anything in violation of the trust provisions is void, not voidable. It's not something that has to be attacked. The provisions of the pooling and servicing agreement also are violated, and the reasonable expectations of the investors who thought that their money was going into a REMIC trust. This also includes the intentional withholding and non-disclosure of other parties who are involved in the alleged origination of the loan, but who were paid fees, which were supposed to be disclosed to the borrower. They were paid fees to act as though they were participants in a standard mortgage transaction. Was no standard mortgage transaction. 96% of the loans are subject to claims of securitization, and what is now realized is that, or taken as true by many people, is what I said 6 years ago, which is that the actual securitization never happened. This act is what the Deutsch case highlights. The court found that pretending to be a lender is not the same as being a lender. The tone of the decision in the case shows a significant degree of displeasure with both the banks and their attorneys. The actions and non-actions by Deutsch before and during the lawsuit clearly illustrate that securitization was a myth. Adam Levitin calls it securitization fail, which I think is a generous assessment of what was done with the investor money. I think, in fact, that securitization fail would probably be more aptly named securitization theft. And how borrowers were lured into deals that were catastrophes waiting to happen. All to the benefit of the underwriting banks that were creating trades using money that belonged to the investors, bonds that belong to the investors, and false notes and mortgages referring to a debt that never existed. This is the part that is most difficult for both borrowers and their attorneys. We all know that money was at the closing table. So what am I talking about in connection with there being no consideration? Well, what I'm talking about is that money did not come from any of the parties that are involved in the chain relied upon by the people who are bringing the foreclosures. What most people don't know is whose money what it was that appeared at the closing. And it was, of course, the money of investors that was illegally diverted from the trust that issued mortgage-backed securities. So just as I have been educating homeowners, lawyers, law enforcement officials, and regulators for 7 years, the same needs to be done to trial judges who are really not all that clear on what it means to be the holder of a note. Even if we assume that the note is a negotiable instrument, the holder is subject to the same defenses that the borrower could have raised against the original lender. The holder steps into the shoes of the original lender and is not at any higher level, nor does it have any greater rights than that of the original lender. So if the defense is lack of consideration because the original lender never loaned any money, then the lender, who in this case has cast itself as a holder of the note, must prove that there was consideration. And we all know there wasn't. If the loan is defended based upon prohibited table-funded loans, as stated in the Truth in Lending Act, federal statutes, and Reg Z from the Federal Reserve, the holder must prove that there was no table-funded loan, even when we show that the evidence is clear that someone else was funding the loan. The latest argument I'm hearing is that there doesn't need to be a loan in order to enforce the note. All you need is a signature on the note. I just argued a case yesterday where the opposing counsel used that with a straight face. Imagine, no loan, but they can still enforce the note and mortgage against you. That's not the law. There is such a provision in the law, but it is only for holders in due course, which I've told you is a person who has purchased the debt for value in good faith and received delivery of the loan documents without knowledge of the borrower's defense. But you will note that they never make the allegation that they are holders in due course because they know they can't prove that they ever paid for the loan, which is why we know that there was no consideration for any assignment, endorsement, or power of attorney going all the way back to the loan origination itself. Nobody demanded payment because nobody had paid anything. The banks are playing this game, and they are winning. They have the government and investors scared to challenge them because they are primary dealers in debt, and most people are afraid if the big banks go down, they will take all of civilization down with them. Their entire game rests upon a gamble. They know that most judges don't know the difference between a possessor, holder, holder with rights to enforce, and a holder in due course. Their game is to allege that they are a holder and then argue for rights as though they were a holder in due course, which they are not and they don't allege. As a holder in due course, they could block discovery and most of borrowers' defense. But as soon as a judge or anyone else claims that the collector or foreclosing party is a holder in due course, they cannot escape the elements of the holder in due course, which includes payment. Once it is established that payment was never involved in the origination of the note and or any subsequent transfers, the paperwork is revealed as a sham. The question left outstanding is the owner of the debt. Once it is established that the owner of the debt is actually a group of investors who were defrauded and whose money was diverted away from the REMIC trust that issued the mortgage-backed securities that the investors thought they were buying, the only thing left is to inquire about privity. That's a legal term. The relationship between the originator and all of those successors on the one hand and the investors who were duped into advancing money to an underwriter under false pretense. Their money never went into the trust as was agreed pursuant to the prospectus, and therefore the trust was never funded, which means that the trust never had the money with which to buy or originate loans. In the absence of a nexus between those pretender lenders and their successors on the one hand and the investors on the other hand, there is no right to collect, service, or represent as trustee the interests of the investors whose money is no longer subject to the provisions of the trust instrument because the trust itself was completely ignored. So Deutsch lost for all the right reasons. And my prediction now is that we are turning the corner. The banks are going to start losing foreclosure cases, and they are going to be hit with larger and larger punitive damage awards for wrongful foreclosure. These fines that they've been hit with and so-called settlements do not even touch their profitability or their ability to do this again. It was a fraud on the investors, a fraud on the borrowers, a fraud on the government, a fraud on the courts, and a fraud on our entire society. What all this means is that there is a lot of cleanup work to be done. And while the Financial Consumer Protection Board is starting to move on a lot of these issues, cleanup work that needs to be done is really in the courts and really needs to be done at government levels where these large banks are broken up into much smaller pieces and where their assets are valued at what they should be. Right now, they're allowed to value the so-called mortgage bonds that they say they're holding, which in fact belong to the investors, and which in fact are worthless because the trusts that the mortgage bonds were issued from never got the money. That whole scenario is what's going to bring down the banks. Right now, the fact that they are able to sell those bonds at 100 cents on the dollar to the Federal Reserve means that they can treat it as a tier one asset, which has been valued in the marketplace. But the truth is, as the Fed knows, those bonds are worthless. And the only reason they're buying it, well, the two reasons they're buying it, are to prop up the large banks, leaving smaller banks to collapse under the same fraud that was done to them by the large bank. And the second reason that the Fed is funneling literally trillions of dollars into these banks is for the banks to be buying the treasury bills and treasury bonds of the United States government, which has kept the government floating. All of that could have been taken care of in deals that were more transparent. It started in the Bush administration. It was continued in the Obama administration. Neither president had a single clue as to what was really happening on Wall Street. In a way, you can't blame them, only in the sense that they had no prior experience that would have enabled them to understand what was happening on Wall Street. But they did have experts who fed them bad information, and I think they were fed that bad information on purpose. Thank you for joining me. I will take questions next week. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to our broadcast. We hope that you tell your friends about us and let them know that there is hope and help in this financial crisis. Tune in every week to the Neil Garfield Show for free information and advice, and visit our blog daily at The Living Lies Blog. We provide support services, the latest strategies, analysis, expert consultations, testimony and declarations to use in your battle against the largest economic crime in human history. For information concerning Neil, the team at Living Lies, or the law firm, go to www.livinglies.wordpress.com or call 520-405-1688. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the host and should not be attributed to any other person or entity. Welcome to the Neil Garfield Show.